Hello, hello everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Palace Way podcast. Been a while, hasn't it? We'll be looking at all things Palace that happened over the international break, as well as a timely refresher in case you've just about got over the pain of that late equaliser with Luton at home. And joining me to unpack everything today is Bobby Manzi, first and foremost, our senior editor here at the Palace Way. How you been, Bobby?
Yeah, I'm not bad. I'm not even sure senior editor is my title anymore. And, it's been a whirlwind couple of days. I've been very busy with all sorts of different things, covering different clubs. I've been bounced around all over the place, but I'm really well.
Good stuff. And now that you're like the sort of what the Brexit Fabrizio Romano, can you tell us where you've been today?
Yeah, no, it was a very monumental day for me, if you like, because I got to cover my first press conference being in the room. I've covered lots of press conferences, normally digitally. I covered Jonas Ivel last week and actually spoke to him, but that was also digital. But it was the first time I'd actually been in the room. So we went over to Cobham and spoke to Mauricio Pochettino, and it was a great experience, and I'm looking forward to having many more conversations with him for the rest of this season.
Yeah, big milestone. Congratulations, and hopefully the first of many more. Unfortunately, Liam's had to take a break of absence, just for personal reasons. We're obviously wishing him all the best. He's still in touch with everyone here. So joining us today is someone. Well, we had to kind of scrape the bottom of the barrel in his absence. So unfortunately, I've got to bring it. I couldn't keep a straight face. Thank God the cameras are off today, because I'd have you'd have seen me cracking up about half an hour ago. Anyway, point is, we've had to sort of really cobble together everything last minute, and unfortunately, I have to welcome Bruno back to the podcast. Bruno, let's get this over with. How you been?
Well, I'm not gonna lie, much better ones. I heard your Brexit Fabrizio Romano comment about Bobby Manzi, because similarly, I would have been laughing hysterically if you could have seen me without a camera on, because that was absolute class. So yeah, feels good to be back to hear your beautiful dulcet tones and the trademark hello, hello, everybody.
We've genuinely had to record this intro about five times. I don't think there's any shame in admitting that. I've tried really hard to find the best way to actually structure that, and I don't know why, for some reason, that I've just been off the flow. Maybe it's just because it's been a few weeks since we've actually recorded. And I think this is again a good time to bring in this overall theme. I think we've obviously had a few weeks off as a pod, and this is going to be a kind of longer, kind of refresher episode. We want to have. There's a lot of stuff to talk about. Whether it's injuries, whether it's key moments for country level for Palace players. There's a lot of financial news. There's a lot of key debates. We've even got a little game at the end that I want to play just to kind of flesh out some opinions about the most essential personnel at the club and what's going on there in the future. But I think we have to start from the top. It's been a while since we've discussed football at all, really. And I think Luton is no exception. Obviously, Palace in the reverse fixture suffering a very embarrassing 2-1 defeat on the road that I think caused a lot of anger in the fan base. And I think a similar anger was simmering at the full-time whistle there at Selhurst Park a couple of weeks ago. I can't believe that. But Bobby, I'll bring you in. I mean, obviously, it was Glasner's third game. I think the jury's still very much out on him. But it nonetheless felt like a really good opportunity to make it 2 wins in 3. Plenty of positives from Burnley, plenty of positives from a tough Spurs test. But I think Luton felt like a game that we really should be grabbing by the horns, right?
Yeah, and I think they did grab it by the horns for large portions of the game. I actually thought Palace played decently. They had a lot of chances, and they missed a lot of chances. And that really was what was fatal for them in the game, because they didn't take their chances. And some pretty weak defending led to a late Luton equaliser. And maybe some would say that Luton deserved an equaliser off the back of their second half performance, especially in the last 20 minutes, where Palace just didn't do too much. But the chances that Palace missed in the first hour of that game, I mean, there's no way they should have been losing the game. They didn't take their chances. They weren't clinical enough, and unfortunately for them, they only walked away from a point when they could have deserved all three.
Yeah, we'll definitely look at some of the stats on chances created, because I think a key theme was basically being punished for our own wastefulness. I think it's really a draw that was brought on ourselves, frankly. And equally, I think we have to briefly discuss the fact that I think there was a brief sense of entitlement among Palace fans, despite the reverse fixture, as I mentioned. This was still a huge opportunity here against a side that we really should be beating and believe that we should be beating. And I think that belief is always going to impact the way in which we approach that game. But it was very positive. And I think if you put the result aside, there were plenty of good phases of build up, really, really strong chances, really good fluidity. And one particular flashpoint was obviously the goal that we did manage to get. It was a fantastic bit of link up down the right and, towards Mateta from Munoz. But I think there has to be credit to the latter there for his pressing and his ability to cause a situation. It was a pretty terrible pass from Alfie Doughty just past the 10 minute mark, leaving plenty of space for Munoz to run in and basically take free rein over the pitch. I mean, Bruno, I'll bring you in. What did you think of the goal?
It's the product of the Oliver Glasner sort of football approach, right? In that you've got these high pressing wing backs, one of which is Munoz, who is a natural fit for that role. You know, he's got effectively three lungs, it feels like, the way he drives himself forward and backward constantly throughout every game. He does on the international stage too, as we'll discuss. And it was his sort of keen eye and just sheer brutal determination that got him there. And eventually he got the pass off to JP, who improvised brilliantly with the finish. But I think that Luton game as a whole really did epitomize how much we've changed since, you know, in such a short period of time since Hodgson left, right? You know, instead of scoring one goal from very, you know, lower than one XG, which felt like it was a trend, you know, we were performing relatively poorly against sides like Chelsea, but Lerma would score a screamer. Or, you know, before that it was Eze or Elise. We felt like we were outperforming our XG, whilst now we're underperforming it. We're creating more chances, we're battering teams, we're pressing them high, and we're actually creating from set pieces, even if we haven't technically scored directly from one yet, if you don't count the second phase Richards goal against Burnley. But the point is, the Glasner tactics are already having an impact on the goals we score. We know that's something he wants to do, which is to score goals. So there's sort of a symbiotic relationship between the style of football and the type of goals that we're getting. But there are still some sort of lingering remnants as well, which we'll discuss as we go on. So yeah, it was a brilliant goal. Fantastically worked from Munoz, who is in great form at the moment, and really excellently finished from JP, who has sort of cemented himself as a starting striker for us in recent months.
I know it's a big throwback to his back heel against Brighton. I think arguably it's even more impressive. I know he doesn't do a double nutmeg, but he's really being held off by the defender there, and he shows tremendous strength and technique to get it right in such a short space of time. I mean, it's a
He
phenomenal
missed
goal, to
a
be fair.
great chance to put us 2-0 up, though, didn't he? To hit the side netting when really you should only be putting that in the back of the net. And he missed quite a few chances in the game. Of course, the Eze chance comes back to you where he tried to dink the keeper from 40 yards out and that nearly went in. But I think just fine margins cost Palace that day. And unfortunately for them, you know, they only left the game with a point.
Oh, definitely. I mean, there were so many missed chances. I mean, we talked about stats just then. We had a 2.58 XG. So again, we underperformed massively in that game. We had 21 shots, although only four were on goal. I think they all felt pretty big. So, you know, I think there was plenty of creative merit there. And it has been, as Bruno said, an encouraging trend under Glasner. But I think, you know, there were so many key flashpoints in that game where we're kicking ourselves. You know, even just after the goal itself, there's another poor long pass from Luton that's intercepted really well by Anderson, who, by the way, I think personally he's had a big resurgence onto Glasner in a back three. He kind of hoofs it back to Mateta, who then has a certain goal saved by some really great goalkeeping from Kaminski to sort of rush out and just quickly parry it and dive down as fast as you can. And it was just, again, I think it really highlighted this trend of how well we were playing and just how threatening we looked. But I think ultimately we didn't make those chances count. I mean, you mentioned the Eze sort of catching the keeper off the line in the second half. I mean, that was, again, a really, really big flashpoint that had people on their toes. I mean, you were there, like, what did you think of that?
Yeah, I thought it was good. I thought it was good tactical play from Glasner. The fact that he said it post-match as well, that they knew the keeper come off their line, so they thought that might be, if there was ever a chance, they should go for it. And I think that's something that in the Hodgson era, Palace wouldn't have done. They would have tried to get the ball as close to the goal before scoring it. They wouldn't have taken the risk. And it was quite nice to see a Palace side that were up for taking a risk.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't want to speculate, and this is just speculation, but you almost feel like Hodgson was kind of ignoring his analysts. I didn't see much evidence of Hodgson perhaps taking on board some of these things that would have been said to him by those around him. I think he obviously was a listener. Let's not be too harsh here, but I don't think he was someone who would actually look to implement these things from a pragmatic standpoint. You know, it wouldn't necessarily be then prioritized on the training ground. He wouldn't be saying this to staff necessarily or to the players. It would just be a case of kind of sticking to what he knows, sticking to very kind of route one football and hoping for the best. And if a player takes on a bit of a chance like that, then that's onto them. But it certainly wouldn't have been a direction from above. And I think it's really nice to see people singing from the same hymn sheet, really.
Yeah, and I think it shows actually that Glasner was got something right, because I watched Luton play. I think it was Forest. It was Forest the following Saturday, just before the international break. And Forest a couple of times did the exact same thing that Eze done, that one situation, which was see the goalkeeper off his line and go for it, because it was clearly a weakness. So it was really nice to see weakness identified, weakness target, even though it didn't go in, it was very close. But it was nice to see, like I said earlier, Palace taking some risks.
No, absolutely. Look, we've got a lot to get through, so we're not going to spend too much time looking at Luton, but we kind of want to remind of how well we were playing, looking at those flashpoints. But of course, we have to talk about the moment that broke our hearts. I mean, I threw my phone, and I'll freely admit it bought my piss. And yeah, even just prepping the notes today and like actually watching the highlights just triggered something again. It was like a repressed memory that I'd forgotten had from a few weeks ago. I mean, Bruno, we need to talk a bit about this goal because, I mean, when Andros came on and looked threatening, there was a sense of inevitability, and then the ball to actually, find Corley Woodrow was superb, wasn't it? So just talk me through that goal and talk about your reaction to it as well, because I'm sure you have plenty to say on that.
I love that you bring me in for the sort of angry, frustrated response to late goals conceded. I feel like that's becoming a trademark of my appearances on this pod this season because of how frequently we concede them and how it tends to coincide with my appearance on here. But if I'm honest, there were a load of mistakes leading up to it, between the Ahameda dispossession. And Eze then not pressing Andros Townsend before he puts in a, typical cross for a player of his caliber. We know what he can do. We've seen it plenty of times. And the second that bullet went in the box, you just knew it was going in, because we don't have that sort of confidence in our defense late in games. It sort of becomes a lot more fearful. And when that goal went in, I was just like, well, that's 90 minutes of my time effectively wasted, because you have a lot of fun watching the game, but you also really do need to take away the 3 points, because we're invested in this project now about sort of staying up and doing what we can. And it's at the end of the day, I don't want to focus on the goal too much, but if you focus on the result, it's 1 point from 2 games against newly promoted Luton. No disrespect to them, they're doing brilliantly this season, but for a club that's been in the Premier League, 10 times longer, you'd expect us to do better.
I mean, you mentioned mistakes leading up to that goal. Bobby, I know you have something to say as well, but Bruno, what did you make of those mistakes? I mean, Ahamadou is something that we'll get onto later because I think he's caused a lot of controversy and I think people are kind of giving up on him as a prospect, which I think is a shame in many ways, but maybe he's still got a future. We'll talk about that later. But Bobby, I know you have something to say.
Yeah, I thought it was shocking from Ahmed, to be honest. I don't think he should be losing the ball where he did, whether that means kicking it out of play, whether it means trying to play a wild through it. I just think in the position he lost the ball, it was really dangerous territory, and it was naive from him. I wouldn't say we're giving up hope on Ahmed. I think he's going to be a very talented player, and I actually think he's shown, I think he's shown promise, whether that be in his limited minutes under Roy or the time he's seen on the pitch so far against with Glasner in charge. And my other thing was Eze. I mean, it was so infuriating. Ty did well at first, which was slightly engaged with Townsend, and then when the overlapping runner come, he followed him because that's exactly what he had to do. Eze got back into a position, and then he just stopped. He didn't press. He didn't engage with Townsend. It made it so easy for him to get the ball across. I mean, it was absolutely shocking defending, and I mean, he's the reason Palace have lost that game. Because if he would have initiated with Townsend there, there's no way he plays that crossing, and there's no way that goal happens. So it was absolutely appalling. The defending was borderline disgraceful.
Just going to say, one, didn't lose that game, but it bloody
Sorry,
fell.
yeah,
In
that's the
fact,
thing
said
though.
that highlights
The
it,
way
right?
Palace dropped points in that game, psychologically, actually plays in your head as a loss. Walking out of the ground, being in the stands, I wasn't in the press box, I was in the stands as a fan. It felt like you'd lost it because you've gone so long in the game, and that just had that sucker punch at the last minute. It really did feel like a loss. But yes, you're right. A draw that game, drop points is what I should have said.
What I'll say is, with Ahamada, I think you're right. He shouldn't be losing the ball in that position. And it is naive. The way he sort of, his positioning when he receives the ball, where he takes the ball, is not sort of match up. It sort of implies that he has this ability to work his way out of tight spaces at this level, which objectively he doesn't yet. One thing I will pose to both of you, though, is whether or not he was actually fouled when that when the ball was taken off of him. Because I've seen a lot of sort of debate on this on Twitter, so I was wondering what do you guys think? Was Nawr Ahamada fouled, and was that sort of the failure of the referee not to have seen that?
I think possibly he was fouled, yes. I thought the referee had a really poor game, but I don't want to get into that because I rant about referees enough. But I still think the bigger problem there was that he didn't release the ball when he should have released the ball. So it was still, or even though it potentially was a foul, the decision making was still poor. So if they would have won the ball fairly, you still would have been coming into the same situation, same scenario whereby Luton have scored a really soft goal from poor decision making.
I mean, if you want my honest thoughts on it, I think we could spend all day talking about whether it was a soft foul or not, but it's not the point. I think, as we mentioned earlier, we had about 50 million quality chances. Well, it's an exaggeration, but we certainly had four good shots on target, and they were all strong chances, not to mention, Eze's chip that technically wasn't. But you know what I mean? There were some fantastic opportunities there to kill off the game. We could have easily been flying 3-0 up at, 60 minutes or whatever. I think the fact we're talking about whether a foul is too soft or not shows you our problem. I think we're not capitalizing on the style of play that we've implemented yet. And that will come with time. Let's not forget, this is only three games into the Glasner era. We'll talk about the Marbella training camp and the benefits of that in a bit. But, up to that point, Glasner's had very little time to work with the squad. There's had no real onboarding period in terms of actually sort of maybe sitting down and fully implementing his tactical style, fully bringing in new players to suit that system. It's very much kind of right. What can we do immediately? And then we build on from there in terms of a longer term plan. And I think that really, really showed against Luton. So, all good things could take time, right? And I think we will get there. But I think, we shouldn't really be dwelling too much on that. I think, yes, Amada did have a bit of a dodgy game, but, everyone's capable of that. And I think we need to be a bit more forgiving as a fan base of players that are still finding their feet, particularly when someone's not had a lot of game time and a lot of consistency like a Amada. But, I digress. Certainly, I think if you actually want my genuine, like, it was it a foul, yes or no, my honest thoughts is it's probably a little bit too soft, but for reasons I've already mentioned, I don't think I want to unpack that a little bit too much longer. Look, I think we want to move on from this because I think mentally the fan base has had a little time to progress. Like by the time this goes out, we obviously have time to process this. We're looking at Forest, there's a lot to come up. So I think there's a lot of news to cover first and foremost. And I want us to look not actually at the international break itself in terms of some of the players that saw some really notable flashpoints and some personal triumphs. I wanted to actually talk about some financial news, and I know this is probably the point where I sound like a kind of like Poundland accountant, but seriously, there's something to be said here because I think I really kind of understood where the club was coming from when I saw this news, and I think a lot of people don't necessarily. I'm not an expert. I'm not. This isn't a financial podcast. I have no background in accountancy, but I do. And I wanted to kind of clear this up. So, for those that missed it, big story coming out in the Daily Mail. Crystal Palace have taken out a loan from American lenders MGG Investment Group. Essentially, I would see this as a kind of a glorified payday loan. It's not anything to worry about, which I think is something I really want to stress from the get-go because I saw a lot of concern on social media about this. The club isn't, completely illiquid. We're not on the verge of bankruptcy or anything silly. All this is designed to give us a kind of financial lever in the transfer market. This is basically a loan that's secured against future transfer receipts, which again is a fancy way of saying a payday loan. It's kind of bridging loan is what they're called. The idea is that basically you take the money in advance from a bank so that you've got that kind of transfer kitty to invest from the get-go. And then you're not reliant on a big sale from your Gays and your Elises before you then have money to invest. So it actually gives you mobility. You can do your business early. You can prepare as though the money's already there. And equally, you don't get ripped off because you don't see kind of clubs seeing the big headlines and thinking, oh, well, they suddenly got 60, 70, 80, however much it is from Elise. We need to sort of bump up our demands for player X. It's all designed to give us flexibility in the market. It's designed to help with good planning. It's designed to sort of give us a better negotiating hand. And it will also help partially with, according to the source itself in the Mail, with some day-to-day operating costs as well. That last bit's a little bit more concerning, but I don't think it's anything critical or anything that suggests a bigger problem that there actually is. I think it's genuinely just to keep us liquid and to keep us mobile, which I think is a very sensible thing to do for the reasons I've just outlined. So just wanted to clear that up. But I mean, Bobby, I'll bring you in. What do you ultimately think of that decision?
I think it makes sense. I liken it back to when they did the same thing on the Aaron Wan-Bissaka sale. I mean, I'm not entirely, totally all over the story. It's not a question I've asked any of my sources, and it's not a question I plan on asking any of my sources because, quite frankly, it's nothing to do with me. But I think in the Daily Mail article, it kind of referenced that it might be to do with the Sorloth sale, which they've not quite received all the money for yet. Like 18 million we sold Sorloth, or Palace sold Sorloth for, and it's getting some of that money in. And as you say, it's the fund for a busy summer, and because they need liquid cash, right? Although a lot of Premier League deals are done over installments, especially Palace, you still need that first installment, you still need that liquid cash. And as you say, there's going to be outgoings, but they don't want to sell all three this summer, so they do need some hard cash to spend with. So to me, it makes total sense.
Yeah, definitely. I think in part, sell-off money will be involved in, as you say, for sure. Like, I think it's really worth pointing out a bit about the the securing of the loan against future transfer receipts as well. It's essentially the bank kind of acknowledging that there probably will be an injection of cash in a few months after, or sorry, not a few months, a few weeks after the loan is has landed. So again, I think it suggests that the club is strategically planning for maybe a couple of big sales. I think that's not exactly a huge surprise to anyone, but I think it kind of speaks for itself once you learn that that's part of the
I
deal and that's
mean,
kind of the tacit agreement between between the group and between Palace.
I've been banging on about it all season on here. At the start of the season, we expected Yoa and Sheikh Doucouré to be sold. Those plans changed because obviously Sheikh did his injury, so no one's going to spend 78 million pound on a player that's had a been out for half, at least half a season, maybe even more. However long that Luton game was ago, I don't know. I tried to erase it from my memory. And then. So Yoa, we all expected to go, but things slightly changed. I now expect it to be one of Ebs and Olise, if not both. I don't want to scare people, but I realistically I only see one of them going because I don't see Palace selling them both. But the problem you have is they both have release clauses that can be triggered this summer. So in a really awful situation, you could end up losing both. I also think there's a lot of clubs sniffing around Mark, but I know for a fact the clubs would rather sell Yoa because it's the perfect time to sell him because he's just come into his prime, if you like, and it's the perfect time to make maximum profit upon a player you paid whatever it was, 20 million pound for.
Not least to say in the summer he'll have only a couple of years of his contract, right? So
Oh
it's
yeah, so
probably
exactly. So
advantageous.
ideally you sell Yoa this summer, but I mean, look, if they want to get Mark now down to fresh terms, which I can't really see them getting done, but we'll wait and see what happens there. They're going to have to put release clause in. So once again, you've got the issue of release clause. You've got Tottenham sniffing around. Someone I know at Tottenham has said they're really keen, but they're not keen on breaking their club transfer record, and it would take them to break that record for Mark to go there. There's interest from Man United. There's interest from another club that I can't think. Was it Liverpool? Are Liverpool interested in him?
Yeah.
So yeah, interest from major clubs in this country, and I'm not surprised because if he didn't do that knee injury, he would have been starting the last two England games. He would have almost certainly have been starting next to John Stones at the Euros. He is a unbelievable talent, and at such a young age, he's going to go to the very top of the game. Same with Michael. Okay, Ebbs is more coming into his prime, if you like. Yoa's more coming into their prime, but they're four great players that Palace have got, and. You know, it's a testament to their scouting that they've got hold of these players and that big clubs are sniffing around. And I actually think it's a good thing that big clubs want our players, or sorry, want Palace's players, because it means that they're going to get an influx of money and it means they're going to be able to invest more into the squad, the Brentford model, the Brighton model. You sell someone and you replace them with three or four quality players, you'll then sell. And in the PSR climate that we live in, it just allows that club to climb the league table.
Of course. I mean, not least it's good for the players' careers themselves to be Palace. You look at Adam Wharton was the first example that sprang to mind recently, where he actually mentioned the development pathways of other players, your Olises, your Eze's, your Gaze, and so on, in that, Palace are now trusted. They're now seen as a place where, right, if you're coming up from the Championship or you're coming up for another league, go to a middle table club like Palace, sorry, a mid-table club like Palace, and they will develop you. They will get the best out of you.
Do you
You
know,
will be able to take,
someone
yeah.
described it to me in a really funny way the other day. It really made me laugh. And I actually thought, oh yeah, you make a point. Do you know, obviously I assume everyone's familiar with the game Football Manager. Someone said it's like when the players put the treat club as a stepping stone in the contracts.
Yeah.
But look,
I think every
that
player's got that in their contract at Palace. I mean,
yeah,
Jesus, like.
it's But it's a good way to solidify your Premier League position, to make money and then kick on. It's a good model. Whether Brighton or Brentford created it, you know, it's up for the debate. Both chairmen will claim it was theirs and they'll fight till the day they die about it. But it's a clever model. It works. You've seen it work at Brighton. Okay, Brentford, it hasn't worked as well because of what's gone on this season. But, you know, if they would have had Tony and they wouldn't have been so unlucky of injury, they would be in and around Europe again. So,
Yeah.
it's a really clever model. It's a really efficient model. It's very good that Palace have adopted it. It's now whether the people at the top of the club are competent enough to actually get it to work.
Definitely. And I think it'd be really interesting to see how good we are at selling. I think we've been quite poor at that in recent years. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see who does go in the summer. It's funny you mentioned England, by the way, Bobby, because there was some really unfortunate news for Palace there. As you mentioned, Gay, he probably would have started those two games, and then it turns out Johnson was due to start against Belgium as well in that 2-2 draw. Southgate likes him as a number two, but initially he picked up what looked like a minor elbow injury in training. And I thought, Glasner, you tricky bastard, you clever man, you're doing this sort of big six classic of saying, right, they've got a minor injury because we need them for a big title race and no one cares about a friendly with Belgium. But actually, it turned out that what was a minor injury actually could be 15 weeks out for Palace's established number one. And he will now miss the rest of the season, leaving it up to Dean Henderson to shine in his absence. I mean, a lot of fans were recoiling. Like, they seem really flustered, really let down with Jordan Henderson, God's sake, with Dean Henderson. Bruno, I'll bring you in here because it's been a while since I have, to be honest. This whole Johnston Henderson debate is going to take a new turn. It's just ignited again. Do you think it's catastrophic that we've lost Johnston, or do you think Henderson can kind of make up for it if he has anything to make up for, even?
I'm going to sound like Rory. That's all I'm going to say. We are so disrespectful to Dean Henderson as a goalkeeper, as a fan base.
Yes.
We are so disrespectful to this man who is like, an England international, someone that was Sheffield's player of the season and pretty much kept them in the Premier League their first year that they came up in 2019. Someone that never could quite, get a guaranteed starting spot at United, but to be fair, he was playing second fiddle to one of the best goalkeepers in the world at that time. This is someone who has had an awful run with injury, was brought back early from said injury, was carrying an injury when he played for us out of sheer desperation to get us points during the worst spell in our recent history under a manager that was out of ideas and an injury-ridden team. And for some reason, all of the blame has gone on the man that conceded, goals that were pretty difficult to save. I don't see many of the ones that he did concede against any of those teams in that run where he was playing that Sam Johnson was guaranteed to save. I'm sure Bobby will come in and sort of have his own thoughts about that in a minute. But what I'm going to sort of do is go back to the point, which is we're not going to end up losing a significant amount of points in this next run of games because we have Henderson instead of Johnson. I just don't think the catastrophe and outpouring of stress and anxiety about him is in any way justified. People have been talking about recalling Goodman. People have been talking about, starting Whitworth or Remy Matthews. And it just kind of blows my mind because this is a 15 to £20 million established Premier League goalkeeper who, yes, has had a bad run with injuries, but has never demonstrated himself to be anything other than a perfectly competent goalkeeper and who we as a club bought to be Sam Johnson's potential first team successor. He's clearly rated by our hierarchy, and I don't understand why we're so stressed. I think he's become a sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Sort of a
One of
stooge.
many scapegoats, I think.
He's become a stooge and a scapegoat now that Hodgson has left for that period of time, when instead the blame rests on, a poor injury record, atrocious tactics, and generally dodgy defending in most cases.
You know, I think you're definitely right, Bruno. I think if I look back on the games that Henderson played, I don't think he was ever excellent apart from a City away when, in actual fact, that game could have been four, five, six if it wasn't for him in goal. He was absolutely astounding. He was phenomenal. And then after that, he wasn't that great. But I don't think he ever did anything shocking that, was ultra awful and meant he deserved to be slandered in the way he has. I actually saw a tweet from Tom Dutton earlier, and I just get it back up again because I thought it was bang on, which said that Henderson hyperbole is actually crazy. There's not a great deal between him and Sam Johnson, but reactionary Twitter will have you believe we've just lost prime Neuer to an injury and have to fall back on that 13-year-old from the Michael Owen clip. And I thought it was bang on. I think Dean's an excellent goalkeeper. I think he's going to be great for Palace long term, and now he's going to get his chance, and I'm excited to see what he can do.
Absolutely. I mean, his pedigree is phenomenal. I'm not going to pretend, he covered himself in glory in that tough period. But like you say, I don't really see whether Johnston would have. It feels like it's just so much hyperbole at the moment.
I
Honestly,
don't think, personally, I don't
even,
think he commanded his box as well as Johnson does, but I think that's due to a lack of confidence. And the other problem I had with him was his kicking was a bit dodgy, but I also think that's because he was playing carrying an injury. So I'm not actually sure you have seen the true Dean Henderson in a Palace shirt yet.
no, exactly. I mean, bottom line, I always feel like even if you think that Henderson is absolute dog shit, like this is the situation we're in. We are not seeing Johnston for the end of the season, period. Henderson is objectively better than Remy Matthews, and Joe Whitworth has not really done enough to justify taking his
Shouldn't even be
place.
having this conversation, Alex. He's an
No.
established Premier League goalkeeper, and anyone who thinks Remy Matthews or anyone else on our books other than Johnson is a viable option ahead of him is just delusional and consumed by some kind of agenda against a player who has done very little wrong.
And he's even got that passion about him, isn't he? Because
He
right
does.
away, when I thought Palace lacked a lot of passion and lacked a lot of fight and lacked a lot of desire, I, although we conceded four goals, he was the only player who looked visibly frustrated at the players making a mistake, other than Adam Wharton, who actually looked like they were fighting, who at the end showed a bit of passion wearing that shirt. I don't see why there's such an issue with Dean Henderson. I don't get it.
I think it's partly to do with the way that he represents our curious decision making in the summer transfer window, you know, with holding
Yeah, but
and
it's not him, is
late
it?
window signings.
It's
No, it's not him, but people get sort of affected by that and they sort of
but then
still
people
feel it at
need to
some point.
get over themselves, take their issue with the board and the club. But the minute that player puts on a Palace shirt, they need supporting, because otherwise they will
Absolutely.
make mistakes, and otherwise
Absolutely.
you will lose games, and otherwise
One thing.
and then otherwise Crystal Palace will end up in the Championship next season, and the fans will only have themselves to blame.
Yeah, absolutely. But one thing I will say as well about Henderson is, whilst I do think we've been disrespectful to him, I think he just appears, like you said, to be a more sort of nervous type of goalkeeper. But that will come from that lack of match sharpness and that lack of recent experience and the fact he's at a new club in a difficult time. Okay, all eyes are going to be on him tomorrow. If he does make a mistake, we can't do anything about it. He will be starting for the rest of the season. John Stone is out, so all we can do is just get behind him. Because our set pieces defending looks a lot stronger now, which means the onus is less on him to be commanding of his box in those situations. And I don't feel entirely confident with Johnston anyway, so I'm not entirely sure how Henderson's going to be, you know, miles worse. But you know, I've got optimism about it. I'm honestly thinking it could be good for him, it could be good for the club. This could be, you know, a way we move on from a goalkeeper that's actually been also quite injury prone. You know, Johnston's picked up four injuries in the time he's been at the club. And some of them have been quite severe. So, you know, it's a chance, it's an opportunity rather than a devastating negative that's guaranteed to leave us in the relegation spots come May.
This is
And if
going
he
to
makes a
age.
mistake at Forest on Saturday, we'll all eat our words.
Exactly. This is going to age wonderfully when we concede our fifth and Callum Hudson-Odoi is wheeling away. But anyway, that's not the point. I'm really,
Dean
really keen
Henderson
to
own
see.
goal.
Yes. Yeah. Can you imagine? Can you imagine the pacing he's going to get? Anyway, let's move on. Really, really interested to see how he performs against Forest. I think we all just need to get behind him. We don't have much choice as a fan base. Let's back him. Bit of a feel-good story now. Daniel Munoz, he's yet to score his first goal for Palace, but I suspect that will change soon, fresh off an assist with Luton. He sealed a 1-0 win over Spain at the London Stadium. By the way, I love that there's a Spain-Colombia friendly in East London. I find that beautiful in its own way, but that's another story. Also, the
Yeah, it was
Blims
all to do
were
with a
better than
partnership with Stagefront or something, wasn't it? It was
something
just
like that. And not
awfully
least
bizarre.
that it was awful, but you know, there is a really strong Colombian community in London, and the Limbs were 10 times
Oh,
better
it
than
was
anything West
immense.
Ham have
It,
produced.
it,
It was
it's the first time
brilliant.
I've ever seen the London Stadium look like a football ground.
As opposed to a running track or a glorified swimming pool or whatever. Yeah, it looks like a bowl full of absolute soulless bowl. Anyway, West Ham bashing aside, very, very
Soulless
popular
bowl, that's a
goal.
Wagamama dish, isn't it?
Something like that. I'm going to quote you on that, man. Yeah. Anyway, look, we're talking out our backsides now. I'm going to move on. Just talk me through the goal. I'll bring you in on this one, Bobby.
Well, it was just sexy, wasn't it? It was a stunning goal. It had me up doing the salsa. First of all, it was brilliant from Luis Diaz on the left wing, a driving run, fantastic work from in his own half. He whipped a stunning ball across, and Daniel Munoz came charging in like a ball to the far post. And whoa, this just a stunning volley straight into the back of the net. I mean, it was just an unbelievable goal. And if I see that in a Palace shirt, I think I might lose it because it was just stunning. And I think it shows actually. And I know I said I was a bit unsure about him, probably in the last pod or the pod before, but I actually think it just truly emphasizes the quality of player Palace have brought in. And if you put quality players around him, put quality deliveries around him, put players when Elise is playing in front of him, you're just going to see the best of him because I think he flourished in that game against Spain. And that goal just epitomized how good he is.
See,
You know
that
when,
is.
like,
I'm just gonna say is we haven't even seen anything close to our strongest lineup yet. We've got Doucouré, Elise, Munoz, Wharton, yet to play together. Eze
Do you
seen
think
them.
you'll ever see that strongest lineup though,
I
really
think maybe not
play?
with Doucouré. I think maybe not with Doucouré and not with Johnson if you see him as our first choice goalkeeper. But there could be a time at the end of the season where we see, Munoz and Elise overlapping, Gueye and Anderson pinging out balls out wide. Mateta in the middle, Lerma driving up behind him, Eze cutting inside, Franser off the bench, potentially Doucouré off the bench at some point. At the moment, I'd say our strongest lineup probably doesn't include Doucouré because he probably won't be match sharp, by the time he's, ready to play. And if that is this season, then, he probably wouldn't be in that best 11. But, come next season, we'll lose a couple of players, but we'll also sign some brilliant ones. We've got players in our youth academy that can become a part of the squad rotation at some point, I'm so excited to see what David Ozo has in store for us next season. I don't think he'll go out on loan. I know I'm going a bit.
What about your mate Danny Imre?
Well, honestly, Danny Imre, that's a name to watch out for. Obviously, he's been in training this week with the first team alongside a couple of other 21s. He played in Marbella in the second half. He's been in blistering form and, of course, was potentially going to go out on loan in January as well. So he's someone that's quite highly rated. He's already had a loan in men's football at Chelmsford a couple of seasons back. And with whisperings of a potential late Daniel Munoz fitness test on account of him being substituted early for Colombia earlier this week, it's possible that Danny Imre, or our other Daniel, funnily enough, is our only other player capable of playing in that right wing back, right mid role. And that is a position that he has dominated for the under 21s this season. He has, I don't know how many goals, but quite a lot, especially since the turn of the year, assists as well. He is an adept finisher. He's actually great in the air considering he's about 5'6". He's physical. He's got good balance. He's got a brilliant long pass on him. He's a different player compared to Munoz. He's not as quick, and he's not got maybe as great a cross, or that sort of ability to bust a gut as much. He's not as strong defensively. He's got a long way to go. But honestly, if we get to a position where we don't have Munoz this weekend, I would much rather see Danny Imre playing at right wing back. For all I have slandered him, with our own conversations, I've been sort of hesitant to say he's ready for us on account of sort of his physicality and his defensive abilities. But maybe in that right mid role or right wing back role, he'd be able to do that. And for that reason, I'd like to see him start there ahead of players like. I've seen Jordan Ayew's name mentioned or Nahra Hamada. And I just don't think as non-natural players in that position that they'd be a better option than Danny Imre in that case, even though he's got very little experience. He's got that men's professional football experience, which is more than, a lot of our 21s can actually say.
In all honesty, I doubt we'll see Imre in that game. But if there's one thing I will say, it's that Glasner's probably more receptive to embedding youngsters within the first team. And not that Roy did a terrible job of that, I should add. But I think, Glasner will be, particularly as it gets towards the latter stages of the season, I think he'll have a greater propensity to turn to youth and to sort of trust them
Well, if
to
he
get
did see
development
that,
minutes.
it would be, really exciting and really telling of the direction the club's going in because, Imre is a player that would never have gotten a sniff under Roy. And if in this system, Glasner demonstrated a willingness to show young players like that minutes, it would entice other players to come to us, like we were talking about with that pathway for young players, not necessarily from the first team level, but at the youth level, right? If we've been looking at other leagues, signing players from Ireland and Scotland and Northern Ireland and Wales, for example, as a way of sort of expanding our horizons beyond England. After that, it's what the other big clubs do that with Category One academies, which is players from outside of the UK and outside of the UK and Ireland. And I think giving players that we have signed and that have not necessarily solely come through our academy a chance at the first team under Glasner would show, so much excitement and ambition and tempt a lot of players to us instead of sort of rival academies such as Cobham and others. Obviously they still have the name and the resources that we don't quite have yet. But if we show a pathway for players playing more exciting football under an exciting young manager with the players we have, it's seriously enticing.
Absolutely. I think there's, good times ahead for our academy. I think both from their own perspective in terms of the performances on the pitch and the facilities around them, not least to the actual first team pathway. And I think it's really interesting to see that, different youngsters are now being embedded into this Glasner system at youth level. And Imre's thrived. I mean, he's got God knows how many goals. I think, Bobby, you might know that. If you don't, it's fine. But he's scored plenty this season. I think it's fantastic. Unfortunately, there is a bit of bad news in the academy in that Jesse Derry, our high-flying youngster who plays with a goal-scoring threat like Prime Mbappe at about 16, he's unfortunately suffered a season-ending injury. So could you tell me a bit more about that?
Jesse Derry has been in fantastic form this season. It's his first year as a scholar, so he's 16. He's one of the youngest in the under 18s, and he has just dominated. He has scored more than 20 goals, got tens of assists, been called up for England under 17s, where sadly he has picked up this season-ending injury. This week, I'm not particularly worried about that affecting his chance of progression in the long term. He's a really talented young player, and he's so young. He could have this injury and still play in the 18s for another 2 years like other players. But obviously something that has worried a couple of people in the community and amongst Palace fans is the fact that he is such a good prospect, but there's been sort of lingering rumors about a potential exit. Bobby, is there anything you could give us about sort of Jesse Derry's status and maybe where he could potentially go, or if he's, destined to stay here for longer?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting one. And I'm not sure it's actually anything based in any true substance. I keep seeing fans and keep hearing fans and keep having fans ask me, is Jesse Derry off to Wolves? Now, as far as I'm aware, Palace plan for Jesse Derry to sign a contract on his birthday and probably his first professional deal. And that's the plan from the Palace perspective. Now, whether there's other clubs sniffing around him, who knows? But as far as I'm concerned, those Wolves rumours have been created by fans purely because his father is assistant manager at Wolves. Now, I'm not saying he might not end up at Wolves come the summer, but as far as we're aware and as far as everyone I've spoken to is aware, there's not any substance to that yet. And it's more just fans getting a bit, trying to come up with situations in their head and thinking, oh, he's definitely off the Wolves because his dad there. I'm not sure there's any true substance in it.
Yeah, it would be a baffling move for him, considering the quality of our academy, the fact he's been here since he was six, as we said in our 1% article. The fact he's the son of a Palace legend, who used to be assistant manager at the club, and of course his family and he are both based in South London. As far as I'm aware, Sean Derry makes the commute up to the Midlands rather than living there, as I found out. So.
It's not even a sideward step going to the Wolves Academy. Now, I'm not saying Wolves aren't a bigger club than Palace, but in terms of academy football, they're not. Palace are a better academy than Wolves, so it wouldn't really make sense for that if you want to go up and play 21s. But then again, if he goes up to Wolves 21, then gets a loan, maybe it's better because Palace's loan system is an absolute sham and a shambles. So I would get why the player would want to move away, but I'm not necessarily sure that Wolves would be the right option for him anyway.
Well, for me, it's interesting you've mentioned our loan system because there are a lot of players that we've been excited about in our academy in recent times. It's been pretty hit or miss to the extent where I'd say we've maybe had one successful loan or two successful loans in the last 3 years, being Rak Saki's last season to Charlton and Jake O'Brien's to Molenbeek, where he's then gone on to find a lot of success in Lyon as well.
There's one everyone's forgetting that I don't see mentioned enough. The one and only Owen Goodman over at Colchester.
Yes.
He's
Yes.
unbelievable. Everyone kind of forgets about that because he's a goalkeeper. But unbelievable season. That I will give praise for. It was a very, very good loan. But
He's
the rest
been
of them have been an
incredible.
absolute shambles.
Yeah. It's been quite strange because we've got players who are highly rated by the club but haven't gone on to do that well. And I think something that
And it's played, but the thing is, these players are highly rated by the club. They're not just highly rated by the club, they're highly rated by other clubs as well.
Yeah.
But there's a whole, if you look at Sean Gray and to Carlisle, right? My information on that were Carlisle was the first club to come in for Sean Gray. And Palace took the offer straight away, the agent took the offer straight away, the player took it straight away, and they got in a car and went straight out there. They didn't wait and see what other options they were had. And it's gone totally wrong. He's not seen what, a minute of football, or he's seen 10, 15 minutes of football every team. He's barely played for him, sits on the bench.
And they're rock bottom, and they're going
And they're
down.
at bottom of, what is it, League One, League Two? I
Yeah,
can't
League
even
One.
think now. Rock bottom of League One. So he would have been much better off going to a mid-table League Two side and playing football every week. There's just, there's a lack of critical thinking in the loan department, and I don't quite understand it because they're wasting talent. They're loaning talent out too late. They're loaning the wrong talent out. It's baffling. They're trying to sell players. Or I say trying to sell. They nearly sold a very, very good talent in January that is loved by a hell of a lot of people when all he needed was a loan out. And yet now he's still playing in the academy football. It doesn't make any sense what they're doing there. They've got a great academy. They've got great players at the academy. And yet the loan system is a complete and utter failure.
And it's factors like that that maybe would deter players from wanting to stay at Palace. So it's something we would
Yeah,
really want to sort
exactly that.
down.
So that was my point really about Jesse might look at other clubs because the pathway might look slightly better than what Palace's pathway is. I think Palace have got a nice historic factor of the fact players have gone to the first team, whether that be Victor Moses, whether that be Wilfred Zaha, whether that be Aaron Wan-Bissaka, whether that be Tyrick Mitchell. But even players like Victor coming into the first team, that was off luck. That was Neil Warnock wanted a bit of pace in the team, and he threw a player in there that was apparently not ready, and he threw him in there and he succeeded. Aaron Wan-Bissaka, that was luck. They threw him in there because they ran out of right backs and they had to field someone at right back. Tyrick Mitchell was a similar situation. None of these players were ready. So, in actual fact, if there wasn't a bit of luck to it, would we have seen any of these players come through the Palace Academy, or would they have just been another Victor Akinwale? Would they have just been another one of these players who have just disappeared?
It does make you wonder, though, how many players, could you have given a shot that ends up sort of disappearing through the cracks because they just didn't get that chance. But what I'll say in the case of Jesse Derry is now that he's picked up this injury, it's unlikely he probably starts next season with the 21s. He is so young. But in my opinion, I'd say the way forward, if he stays at the club, would be for him to play with the 18, see if he continues that form, and eventually midway through next season, once he's 17, he's develop physically as he will be doing. Give him chances in the 21s, and hopefully in the summer, next summer, we'll see if he's ready for a loan or potentially even first team football because he's developing at an astonishing pace. And it would be an incredible thing if he continued at that pace. Probably unlikely with the injury, but he's one of those players in that age group I can see being a first team Crystal Palace player in the next 3 years. And we need to make sure we hit him on that trajectory and help him on the way there because he is a talent with insane amounts of potential. And that's why he was playing for the England under 17s because we had no one else in that squad. And we have a lot of talented players in our 17s and
I
in our
say
sort of 18s.
for me that the ones that I'm looking at over the next couple of seasons for Palace is Zach, Jesse, Asher, if he can stay fit, and obviously because obviously he had a really bad injury, so it's if that doesn't crop up again, and probably Mofy. I think they're probably
In the loan Mustafa as well. I'd say.
I think they're probably Palace's brightest talents at the moment.
Yeah.
I really like Mola. I think Mola's got a lot about him. I think even though he's loaned, people look at his. This is a misconception I want to clear up as well. And I'm not saying I'm totally in the know on this, but it's certainly what I'm being told. His loan was never for him to go out and score a load of goals. That was never the plan. The loan was for him to go out and show that he can physically cope at that level. And I think exactly what he's done, and he's definitely grown into things, is that he can physically cope at that level. He can take the kick, he can hold the ball up. He's just showing that he's got ability. Didn't mean he had to go out there and score 10 goals for the rest of the season, score 15 goals from the season, because what has he done? He scored two assisted one.
Yeah.
But he's shown that he can cope with professional football. And hopefully for him, he should see a loan out to the next step next year. And try and flourish again. Maybe he might go abroad. I certainly know that's an option for him. But he's got lots of options for next year, hopefully, all being well. And he's another really promising prospect for Palace. And it's the next loan where I will be concerned if he's not gone out and scored a bunch of goals. But this loan was really just showing he could physically cope. And I think he's done that.
And same thing
It's.
with our talented 18s that we spoke about, Mofy, Kindelo, Asher, Jesse and Zach, is most of them have picked up mid to long term injuries this season. So it's been a bit stop and start, but next year they should all be raring to go. Some of them will get loans, some of them will get 21s football, some of them will stay in the 18s and then progress later on. But at the end of the day, we've got a lot of exciting talent in our 18s, a lot of exciting talent in our 21s, and a lot of players out on loan that are flourishing, even if it's not, the first thing on our radar because they're not scoring goals week in, week out. So,
Yeah,
yeah.
as
Those
As
look cool.
well, I know we've gone off on a bit of a tangent and we've come away from the general conversation, but I think it's quite good to talk about the lone players. And one more player I really want to touch on very quickly is Kofi Barmer. Now, Kofi Barmer's never expected to be a player that's ever going to start for Palace in the Premier League, but I think he deserves a hell of a lot of praise for the job he's gone in and done at Wimbledon. He's come on so much from the player that you saw at Palace. He and the player that you saw on loan out on loan at the start of this season before he was recalled and sent to Wimbledon. He's been defensively superb. His long throw-ons have been an exceptional tool for Wimbledon. He's found a couple of goals. He's been absolutely brilliant for Wimbledon. He's looked like an all-round defender at that level. And I certainly think you could see him sold to maybe a lower tier championship side or a top tier League One side, because I think he's proved it now. I think he's proved he's a capable professional. And for Palace's academy system to work, you need the players like Kofi to come through, and you need the players like Boateng to come through that you can sell on for fees and cover your costs for the academy for that year. And then anything else is shown as profit.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I could spend all day listening to you guys talk about the academy. Your understanding is far greater than mine, and I know you're doing great work engaging with it over at palaceway.com. Cheeky plug. But the show must go on. There's so much more news we could talk about. We could talk about the Marbella training camp, but I think it's fairly obvious that that was a good thing for the squad to have over the break. We could talk about Chris Richards keeping a clean sheet in a 2-0 win over arch rivals Mexico for the US, winning a trophy in a con. I can never say it. The CONCACAF. Is
CONCACAF.
that how you say it? I can never say it.
CONCACAF.
Thank you. There, CONCACAF. Hey, that sounds quite tropical somehow. I quite like that. Really, really
They
good to
should
see him
make it
winning
the
silverware.
Coca-Cola CONCACAF Nations League. That'd be
Oh,
a real mouthful.
God, can you imagine? I think I'd have an aneurysm on this pod. I don't think that'd be great for the listeners to hear that.
I'm surprised that you managed to say it without stuttering.
I was impressed. I'm fully stammering. There was, of course, the really big fixture, guys. The British Virgin Islands took on the US Virgin Islands in the Virgin Derby, in which neither team scored in the second leg.
I hear
That
Bruno
felt quite
started for the
fitting.
British Virgin Islands, funny enough. Oh, first.
I knew someone was going to say
Professional
it.
journalist, by the way, making that joke.
Amateur. I'm very amateur.
Yeah,
Brexit
shut
for
up.
Brizio
Brexit for
Romano.
Brizio Romano. Damn right, Alex.
Can you put that in your bio, Bobby? That's
I
gonna.
think it might lose me my role as covering Pochettino's press conferences, but we can see.
That's fine. I'm going to cyberbully you instead. I'm going to just sort of at you constantly on Twitter. I'm going to
They're
get
too
it. I'm
good for my
going to.
interaction, so I'll take anything.
Yeah, we'll do it. We'll get a campaign going to get you known as that. All right. So virgin jokes and other signs of immaturity for grown men aside, really, really exciting things going on over the international break. We don't really have time to cover it all. I want to do justice to something in particular. Obviously, we've started covering the Palace women's team over at palaceway.com. Bobby, you're really our man on the scene, covering all things Palace women. I know you had a few updates to give, and of course, there's a big fixture coming up on the horizon at Selhurst Park. So please tell us more about that.
Yeah, no, I was over at Selhurst on Sunday. It was Sunday. Got to get my brain in gear because normally it's a Saturday, but no, Sunday, women's football Sunday. So yeah, over there on Sunday, a phenomenal crowd, really, 5,566, which is a record attendance for Palace, and to be doing that in the Barclays Women's Championship is very good. It was good to see. It was enjoyable over there. It was a vibrant atmosphere. It was a very different atmosphere to a normal Palace match day, but it was enjoyable. And I mean, Palace are keeping themselves firmly in the hunt for the Barclays Women's Championship title, which would see them promoted to the Women's Super League. Charlton dropped points, which was huge. So it made the buffer between second and fifth 3 points. And Palace are now only a point behind Sunderland with 4 games to play. And I mean, Palace, they owned the game from start to finish. I mean, they had Watford from the very start. It was brilliant. I thought Annabelle Blanchard was absolutely phenomenal, far too good for the level she was playing at. I mean, she needs to go to a Women's Super League side. Hopefully for Palace, that will be them next season and they'll be able to keep hold of her. But she just dominated the game at 10. Palace went ahead really early, 3 minutes in, 1-0 up, and it was cruise control from there, really. About 7 minutes later, they'd scored again, and it was just very easy for Palace. Watford looked like a substandard side, and it was clear to why they were bottom of the table. But it was a real professional job for the Eagles who got it done. And they look in with a very good chance for promotion. I mean, I know the manager probably won't appreciate me saying that because every time you hear her speak, she tries to downplay it a lot. And but you know, I think Palace could be heading for the Women's Super League. They've got 3 huge games left. They play Durham on Sunday. They then host Birmingham. They then away to Lewis, and on the final game of the season, They host Sunderland at home, which is been confirmed this week. I've known for a while, but finally been confirmed for a week that this week that it will be played at Selhurst Park in a game that could determine who will be playing Women's Super League football next season. And I mean, it would be massive for the club to go up, because if you look at their women's team over the past, what, maybe 2, 3 years, it's not been great. They've not had the right managers, they've not had the right players, they've not done well, they've been finishing down the bottom all the time. But you know, they've really kicked on. Grace Williams, director of football, was at Bristol City last year, got them up, and she's done a fantastic job at Palace this year, bringing the right players in on loan, getting the right players in the club. And I mean, they're in a really good position, and I really hope for them because of the job they've done there and transforming a club that they'll be playing Super League football next season.
Yeah, absolutely. Really exciting stuff. And particularly for that last game of the season. I mean, you'd hope that record crowd would be smashed again. I mean, it's been really, really encouraging to see how much the fan base is not, I mean, in the first instance, just learnt about the women's team. I think a lot of people do want to get behind women's football. And, but, you know, women's football is in itself quite healthy at the moment. And there's an increasingly growing interest from it from a different audience, and also from, like I say, from elements of the men's audience too. So it's been really encouraging to see the growth there.
Yeah,
And I'm
and
really, really
the
hoping we can get more of it.
Women's Football Weekend again was another great success. I mean, I don't think whether you agree with the signification behind it, if you like that women's you should just have one weekend for women's football and it's an international break, whatever. I don't quite like that. But I think if you looked at the attendances across the grounds, they were pretty good. Arsenal are st stalwarts in themselves. Actually filling the Emirates out every time they play. They're playing in front of 60,000. But I was in Jonas Ivel's press conference the other week, and he said they can't do it themselves. And I think he's spot on. But I think other clubs are getting there now. They're throwing that investment there. And fingers crossed, over the next 10, 15 years, that the women's game is just going to be elevated to a level similar to the men's game. It's going to take time. It's going to take commercial investment. It's going to take improvement of play. It's going to take more crowds. It's going to take a lot of money and resources being thrown at it. But the game's improving. It's improving every week. It's improving every season. And over the next 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years, the game's going to go to new heights.
Absolutely, and we hope, you know, Palace Women's are part of that. You know, we're very much on the crest of a wave on the pitch. I think off the pitch things are getting better too, as you outlined. So really, really interested to see where things go. If you can make that game against Sunderland, please do. I think it'd be brilliant to see absolutely everyone associated with the club just getting behind the team, really, really putting out a show for them, because they need it. You know, it's such a crucial time here at the season for the Palace Women's team. And you know, it'd be brilliant if we could, as let's be honest, we're a progressive community orientated club. I think it feels fitting that we'd have a WSL team and that we really take that seriously as an ambition. So yeah, really excited to see where we go. But
So
we
we'll certainly have the last two home games covered on the Palace Way. Someone will be there for the Birmingham game. Unfortunately, it can't be me because I'm tied up with the men's team. But I will certainly be at the Sunderland game in the press box, and it's exciting. It's a really good partnership for the Palace Way to actually be getting in the press box and to be promoting this. And I really enjoyed the game last weekend. And you know, hopefully they'll be playing Women's Super League football and the Palace Way can be in the press box again.
yeah, really good stuff you're doing over there. Looking forward to it. And as we've said before on socials and, of course, on the pod, if you are actively following Palace Women's team and you'd like to write about it, we are obviously accepting your interest. And if you really want to get behind the team in that way, then that's just one way you can do it. And we'd really, really love to have new writers on board just to support our coverage. But you can find all of our coverage of Palace Women's and a whole lot more over at thepalaceway.com. Time for a game. Let's play a game. God, the new sauce sounds shit, doesn't it? Start, loan, sell. It's
Can we
pretty
get like a little
simple.
jingle?
We can. I'm not going to cut it. We're not getting a jingle. Yeah, we're not that slick. Come on, don't give us too much
You
credit.
sure about that?
Maybe one day. Maybe one day. If you want to do a jingle on the spot, you can. But I don't think you're going to do that
Absolutely
live.
not.
Exactly. We'll get it. Let's get a jingle at some point.
I will make something abominable and send it to you tonight to throw into the
Please
podcast.
don't. Please don't. Please don't. I was only
Please.
joking.
No,
I'm
we'll
desperate
do
for
it.
it.
It will do it. And I'm going to leave all this in. So for those that have just heard Bruno's awful jingle, I do apologize sincerely. Will your ears recover? Probably not, but then you've been listening to Bruno for large portions of this pod, so they're probably a bit damaged anyway.
I
Woo!
think they're probably more damaged listening to me, to be honest. They're probably sick of the sound of my voice.
Brexit. I'm not going to say it. We said it enough times on this pod, but there's your tagline. Right, start, loan, or sell. I've done it I've deliberately phrased it in this way because I think it's typically like a start bench style. I think loan's more interesting because I think there's an implication there that the player kind of needs more time to get to their highest level. And I've deliberately put players that probably will never see a loan again in their careers because I think it again is a bit of a kind of a theoretical exploration. So, I mean, there's not really any need to explain the rules. I think it's pretty obvious. You're kind of just ranking these trio of players in order of priority. But I think particularly when it comes to things like their contract situation, I think that's something to consider when we talk about selling. Things like transfer value, these sorts of things, they're all going to come into it. So I'm starting with group one, and it's essentially our starting back three when fit, which is Mark Gay, Joachim Andersson, and Chris Richards. Bruno, I'll start with you. Who are you
So
starting?
contract renew option.
No, 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 not at
So
all.
with it, start, sell, or loan, or start, loan,
Yeah.
sell. Start Mark, loan Chris Richards, sell Anderson, because I think we probably get, 45, 50 mil off Anderson, Gay's
Really?
class, and Richards would develop really well at a team playing a regular back three. So yeah.
Yeah, Richards would definitely get, he's got more time on his contract. He'd definitely get meaningful minutes elsewhere. He's getting plenty at Palace, which is quite good. I mean, even just 6 months ago, we wouldn't be saying that. It was almost frustrating how far on the fringes he was. But Anderson, I mean, I have contention with the whole 45, 50 million thing. I'm not too sure about that, but I don't want to, just dump all over you. Like, what's your reasoning? Do you think clubs would be willing to pay that?
I think he's a 25 to £30 million defender, with a £15 million passing ability. And then if you throw them together, you end up with sort of 40, 30 to £40 million, and then a bit of sort of Premier League tax on there, Danish international tax, whatever you want to call it. I think with enough negotiation, we could get a deal worth £40 million out of him.
That's serious boy math, but I mean, I appreciate the reasoning. I mean, I'm quite, as you can tell, quite conservative about that figure. I mean, we paid what 14 million. I think we could probably double our money, get in the region of 30. Maybe you throw some add-ons in. Maybe you structure it in a way that's more attractive to buyers because you have got to attract buyers in the first place. There are some suitors. I know Newcastle have historic interest, but there's a few things there. I mean, Bobby. I mean, I'll bring you in on that. Do you agree with Bruno's grouping there? So start Gehi, don't cash in for the sort of the mega 60, 70, 80 million. Sell Anderson. He thinks he can get quite a good fee for him, and then loan out Richards, get him a year of really good game time starting every week. What do you think of that?
I agree with the order, but I don't agree with the Anderson fee. I think 35 to 40 million would be a good price for Yoa. I think certainly in the PSL climate, where not many clubs are going to be able to buy players in the summer if the rules stay as they are, especially Newcastle needing to sell, and they notoriously, as you said, are the club after him. So unless he goes abroad, really and truly, who's going to buy him for £50 million? Nobody. So Palace will have to lower their demand slightly, which probably means he'll probably stay and they'll sell Mark because he's the marquee player to sell. But certainly, if it was me, I would be starting Mark. I would be keeping him for another season, letting him develop even more, hopefully coming off the back of a Euros campaign. But that remains to be seen. I know he had the surgery. He could have carried on, but I know he had the surgery to ensure that he would be on the plane to Germany. And obviously offset any future issues by getting the issue dealt with straight away. So yeah, I would be starting Mark. I would be loaning Chris. But if it was bench, it would be bench and Chris rather than loaning. But I get the premise. And yeah, I would be selling Yoa. I think it's the right time to sell.
Very, very good points, to be fair there. Group two, Adam Wharton, Naoru Hamada, Jefferson Lerma, Bruno.
Am I starting with this one?
No, Bruno.
God. It's just going to end up being an age thing every time, I think, right? Like you want to loan out Naoru Hamada because you feel there's something there. Whilst with Lerma, I feel like, because at the end of the day, I'm starting Wharton no matter what, right? And you can't loan out Lerma because he's basically 30 now. It just wouldn't make sense. So, yeah, I guess sell Lerma, loan Naoru Hamada, and start Adam Wharton.
I certainly agree. I think start. See, this is really difficult for me, right? Because I say this as a neutral, as a journalist, rather than as a fan, which I'm really trying to distance myself from. But I notice I keep saying we every now and then. My favourite player to watch in a Palace shirt is Jefferson Lerma.
Yeah, me too.
I was saying this to Bruno earlier. I just love him. I think he's absolutely brilliant. I think he's been a sound addition for Palace. I think he was the perfect start to the summer, coming on a free, being done before the season was already over. In the same fashion that Ben Johnson seems to be done, which kind of come out of the blue, and people were then telling me it's happening, it's happening. But yeah, no. So I think so he was a sound addition. I think he's brilliant. I think he's had a fantastic season. I think if he would have been next to Doucouré all season, he would have been even better than what we've seen. But premise of the game, I think it has to be the age thing. So I would be starting Walton, who I think is exceptional. I would be loaning Amma, and I've actually never seen a player who screams "I need a loan" more than Naira Armada. So I actually think that's a really good premise of the game rather than bench, because I think he needs to get out and play some senior football and get some minutes. Because, like I said earlier, I think he's a huge talent. I think he will be really good, but he just needs game times. He just needs a chance to learn senior football somewhere. So I do think he needs a loan to maybe back to the Bundesliga, or maybe to La Liga or Serie A, because that's played at quite a high intensity. So that could suit him to learn a bit more about the fast-paced nature of the Premier League, because I think that's the league that plays the most similar pace to the Premier League, if you like. And then yeah, because it's there, I would sell Lerma, but begrudgingly.
Yeah, very sound reasoning again. I mean, right, I'm going to wrap up with probably the toughest group of all. Bruno, Elise, Eze, Decore.
Oh my God. Sell Eze, loan Doucouré, keep Elise, because Elise is just a ridiculous footballer, isn't he? I'm saying keep, start, whatever him, because I want him to be in a Palace shirt for as long as possible. Eze, he's hitting his prime. We'll get the best money we'll ever get from right now. He signed a new contract. He's reaching the prime of his career. City are interested, amongst others. There is a player there that will fetch us a very handsome fee, more than four times what we paid for him, most likely, which would be, brilliant for our club's financial situation and for future signings. Decore, effectively a season out due to injury. If we're going to loan out anyone out of those three, it would be the player that would benefit the most from game time, especially when we've got a core two of Wharton and Lerma that's doing brilliantly at the moment. Obviously, class player in a situation where this isn't the choice I have. Would much rather keep him. But yeah, of those three, Decore would absolutely go out alone for me.
Bobby?
Brace yourselves. I'm about to disagree.
Oh, terrible news. Right, go on.
I know this is gonna blow listeners' minds, and they're gonna think I'm absolutely mental.
They
But
already think that.
I'm
Just
gonna
saying.
try and explain it with a little bit of logic. I might even come across sounding like Steve Parish. I know, crazy. People are gonna hate me. But I would be starting Decore. I would be loaning Elise, and I would be selling Eze. And I say this purely from a financial perspective. Doucouré is coming off the back of an awful injury, whereby he's going to need game time, whereby he's going to need a club that trusts him. That club is obviously Crystal Palace, because they know what they're getting, and he will come straight back into the starting 11 off the back of a pre-season. So I would start Doucouré. I would then loan Elise, because everyone knows what player Elise is. Everyone knows he's going to be one of the best players in Europe. If you're offering for loan somewhere, all the best clubs are going to be sniffing around him. And I get this is all very hypothetical. All the best clubs are going to be sniffing around him. So you would loan him out, let him go and have an outstanding season somewhere, preferably not in the Premier League. And you would sell him the following season for the profit that you were going to make anyway, and probably even more, because he's proved he's done it at a higher level. And I would be selling Eze, because it's the perfect time to sell him. So to purely maximize financial return, I would do it that way. But yeah, if you're asking me what player I want to see play for Crystal Palace and make them look like Barcelona in that beautiful red and blue stripe, I would be keeping Michael Elise all day long. But just purely from a financial perspective, and to be a little bit different, I would be keeping Elise, sorry, keeping Doucouré, loaning Elise and selling Eze, and then eventually selling all three for maximum profit and investing that straight back into the squad.
But any sad reasoning, I have to admit, that's given me food for thought. I haven't even revealed what I would have gone for, but some things are just best kept a mystery. Listen, thank you very much for your time, guys, and thank you to everyone for
Future,
listening.
no. I'm sorry,
If you,
I was gonna go on there with the Kung Fu Panda. The future's a mystery, or whatever it is.
yeah, no, to be
Did you
fair, I
see
see
the
where you're coming from.
manager who said it the other day? Oh, it was hilarious.
Yes,
It did. Oh, it
yes.
was so good.
Yeah, that's
I've
brilliant.
got a really soft spot for them now. I just think it was brilliant. My second club, if you like.
God, you've heard it here first. Bobby's a plastic. And on that strange bombshell, thank you everyone for listening. If you haven't done so already, make sure you're following our socials at the Palace Way, all one word, all exactly as you'd expect, particularly on our X, formerly known as Twitter account, whatever you want to call it. And obviously check out our amazing content for not just Palace men's, but our exclusive articles, our fantastic academy coverage, and of course our coverage of Palace women's, as we've discussed. You can find all of it at thepalaceway.com. Again, exactly as you'd expect it. We even have Joel Wardle. That's it, our very own Wordle. You can find it all at thepalaceway.com. And last bit of business from me. If you could leave us a review on wherever you get your podcast from, that would be deeply appreciated. Doesn't matter if you leave 1 star, 5 star, whatever you want. We just want to know your feedback so we can improve. Everything's read, everything's appreciated, and we try our best to factor it in. So if you haven't done so already, feel free to leave a review.
Thank you very much for your time, Bobby. Closing thoughts?
I don't really have any closing thoughts. I don't know. Of the palace, I guess.
Bruno.
Bring on Forest.
Have a lovely bank holiday weekend. That is my closing thoughts. Happy Easter to everyone not celebrating. Enjoy the extra days off.
Yep, if you haven't done so already, leave us a review. You can say whatever you want. Any feedback's appreciated. But as Bruno said quite rightly, we will see you at Forest, up the palace. Take care, have a good Easter, and we'll see you in the next episode.